you've been looking at this and the number of people who are willing to lie to get power, and that there are a lot of them. And you quote in particular what a survey that said 40% of people on their resumes will lie on their resumes.
Well, of course, it depends. I don't want to become Clintonian in my parsing of the word lie, but yes, people oftentimes, and you know, there have been scandals, football coaches, whose name escapes me at the moment, but there have been some very prominent football coaches who have lost their jobs when it turns out they manufactured educational and other background credentials. Right. There have been some very prominent CEOs and CFOs who have been forced out of their jobs, or not necessarily so prominent, but the major figures in business who have, you know, manufactured credentials and things. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, if we wanted to do this at Stanford, we'd probably have to have a full-time person. You know, where I'm always hearing about people who say, you know, well, this guy, I met this person, and they said that they taught at Stanford Business School. And I said, well, you know, they showed up once as a guest lecturer. That isn't quite like being a professor here. So, yes, there is a common, well, let's call it embellishment. People will oftentimes embellish their accomplishments and their educational credentials, and what that suggests is that if you're going to use a resume to hire, you ought to probably you know, do a little more thorough background checking, because a lot of the stuff on the resume may not be quite true.
Well, you know, you're making a vague reference to Coach George O'Leary's resume at Notre Dame, where
that's
he claimed.
I forgot his name, but you remembered. That's exactly correct.
I knew him a little bit, and so I was really shocked when he did that. I knew him when he was a coach at Georgia Tech, and so it really caught me off guard. He never seemed, you know, it's funny, he never seemed like the type, I guess we could say. But the truth of it is that if you don't lie somewhere along the way to the top, you may never get to the top. And that the you get a lot of people at the top. J. Edgar Hoover, I think, is a really good example, who one of the first things he did when he achieved a level of power was to go back and wipe out most objective documentation about his biography. He didn't want people to be able to know where he came from, who his relatives were. I mean, that's an interesting thing right there. That, to me, that was true power. J. Edgar Hoover, to me, is a guy who had a lot of power in our society.
Yep. Yes, he did. He had an enormous amount of power, and I think he used it in interesting ways you've just suggested. And one of the interesting things is that because he was, you know, one of the things that I think his biography or story really teaches us is that in order to accumulate enormous amounts of power, it's helpful to stay in the job for a long period of time. And it's also helpful to be in a position where it looks like nobody has the strength to get rid of you, because you've got more secrets on them than they have on you, and as a consequence, you know, they will come to terms. But to the extent that you stay in a position a long time, you will come to know, I think the often phrase is used, where the bodies are buried. You will know what people have done over time. You'll have some institutional context, and so therefore, the longer you stay in a job, the harder it will probably be to get you out of it.
Well, you know, you brought up secrets, and I want to address that, because I think that a cheap and easy way to get power is to be perceived as having a secret or secret knowledge that only you can give out. And that there's a lot of people who achieve a power. I'll go back to Senator Joe McCarthy, who achieve a level of power by being able to pawn off secrets, say that I have this information. Nobody else has it but me. I have it. And people are the secrets create their own orbit, and people get sucked into them because they're so wanting to get to that little inner circle around that secret they can actually read what the secret is. And I always find that fascinating. The people who give out the answers are not nearly as powerful as the people who propose the questions.
That's certainly correct. I think that your Joe McCarthy example illustrates, I think, another very important principle, The problem wasn't that Joe McCarthy had secrets. The problem is that Joe McCarthy didn't have any secrets, but he was making the stuff up. And in the words of, I think this is Mark Twain, who was the source, and I'll paraphrase it a little. You know, somebody asked Mark Twain why he didn't lie, and Mark Twain said, I didn't have a good enough memory to lie. If you're going to be a successful liar, you have to have a fabulous memory, because you have to be able to remember exactly the story you told and to whom you told it.
So the idea of lying to get to the top and the resumes, even when people are lying on something which is verifiable, like you're saying, I have an advanced degree from Stanford, either you do or you don't. But that doesn't stop a lot of people both from lying and also getting away with it. I mean, there's a lot of folks who just, you know, who get caught in a bald-faced lie. It's just not true. But somehow they have enough human capital to remain in power or to get past a point that might have taken down a lesser person. Why is that true?
Well, you know, I think America is a very forgiving culture in a lot of ways. Particularly, again, I think more for people in business than for people in political life. You know, Martha Stewart went to jail. Michael Milken went to jail. A bunch of people, you know, have driven their companies into the ground. There was an article recently in the New York Times that talked about all these directors from these large, financial institutions that essentially either went bankrupt or got bailed out by the government or some combination. And these directors still serve on boards, and they're still considered to be viable board candidates. And I think part of this is that people oftentimes get a second chance. I think that part of this is something we've already talked about, which is that if somehow you've built this aura and reputation, you can survive the reality of the fact that you've been associated with organizations that have failed miserably. I had the privilege of meeting, and he's, by the way, a very talented guy, somebody who was on the board of Circuit City. And, you know, Circuit City probably, I mean, it's a company that only went bankrupt. It was liquidated and did probably the stupidest thing that you could possibly do as an organization, which was to take their 3,200 top salespeople, which were also, of course, the highest paid people in a partially commission-based organization, and get rid of them all. And that, of course, put them into a death spiral because it turns out the people who, you know, sell the most and make the most are also the most valuable to the organization. And right. This is guys like serving on boards, and he's considered to be a wise counselor and all this other stuff. And he, you know, he wasn't the CEO, but he was on the board of Circuit City when it made this goofy decision. People somehow the taint doesn't go very far, I guess.